What does poetry have to do with leadership? A special podcast series powered by JMJ's Transformation Talks. Join hosts Catherine Schindler and Kelly Bettenhausen as we explore the topic of leadership, one poem at a time.
Welcome to What Does Poetry Have to Do with Leadership? I'm Kelly Bettenhausen, here with Catherine Schindler. We are both senior consultants who are passionate about leadership and have worked with Fortune 500 companies around the world. Our purpose and intention for this podcast is to use poetry to engage with the topic of leadership from a different angle, with creative thinking and language. We invite you to pull up a virtual chair and join us. Today's poem is Walking Meditation by Thich Nhat Hanh. Catherine, tell us a little bit about this poem and how it's related to leadership.
Thanks, Kelly. This poem does not necessarily have the obvious connection to leadership that some of our other poems have had. Some of our other poems have titles like The Leader or For a Leader, etc. And so I find this poem has a connection, however, specifically to one of the activities of leadership that we often introduce and that we support our clients in. And that activity is a listening tour. So I'll explain that in a minute, and we'll look at both of those throughout the conversation here. But first, I want to say a little bit about Thich Nhat Hanh. He's Vietnamese and a Zen Buddhist monk. He's in his 90s now, and he's in very fragile health. And during the course of his lifetime, though, he's established monasteries in different locations around the world. And these monasteries are places where students come and learn on retreats. And one of the practices he is known for is called a walking meditation. In fact, he has a whole book, I saw it in the bookstore the other day, called Walking Meditation. And to be honest, I'm just now learning about all of that. So I'm certainly not an expert or highly knowledgeable about that, but I am learning. Then on the other hand, many times I think of meditating. If I think about meditating, I think of it as sitting still with my eyes closed, focused on my breathing for some period of time. And it can be kind of a rigid and still image. And although, like I said, I'm just learning about this, my understanding of a walking meditation is that you literally are walking while meditating, but that it's not about the walk. It's about who you are being while you are walking. And how you are being is that you're fully present, you're fully aware, and your mind is calm and not jumping around to every single distraction that comes across it while you're walking. So Thich Nhat Hanh leads walking meditations, and he teaches his students that it's about the way one walks. And I've read, he said, the way one walks with a resting mind, an allowing mind, and a welcoming heart. So back to our business settings then, briefly, a listening tour is a walk that we encourage managers to take, and where they engage with the people who are working on the front lines of their business. And actually doing one of these listening tours is an act of leadership. So when we read this poem, I want to connect the two, the practice of walking meditation with this specific act of leadership, which is a listening tour. You know, many times it's been said that the people who are closest to the problem are the same ones who are closest to the solution, but they're furthest from the resources and power. And I've discovered that usually managers and people with higher levels of authority in an organizational hierarchy are in offices, and they're removed from the action on the front line where the direct work of the business is happening. And those managers are making decisions about how that work is done and about the people who are doing that work. Sometimes people call the front line, where the work of the business is actually being done, you can hear people call it the coal face, or they might call it the pointy end of the stick, or talk about the people who are closest to the pain. And often those managers are not closely engaged. The managers are not closely engaged or connected to those workers, to what those workers know and how it is for them to be doing that work. So when I read this poem, all of that comes to mind for me. And for me, I think of this poem as directed at those managers in those offices that, Kelly, you and I support in demonstrating their leadership by having them go on listening tours at their work sites.
Excellent, Catherine. So I'm going to read the poem and we can begin to make the connection. But first, let's allow ourselves now to understand the way of being when one embarks on a walking meditation. Walking Meditation by Thich Nhat Hanh. Take my hand. We will walk. We will only walk. We will enjoy our walk without thinking of arriving anywhere. Walk peacefully. Walk happily. Our walk is a peace walk. Our walk is a happiness walk. Then we learn that there is no peace walk, that peace is the walk, that there is no happiness walk, that happiness is the walk. We walk for ourselves. We walk for everyone, always hand in hand. Walk and touch peace every moment. Walk and touch happiness every moment. Each step brings a fresh breeze. Each step makes a flower bloom under our feet. Kiss the earth with your feet. Print on earth your love and happiness. Earth will be safe when we feel in us enough safety.
That's beautiful. Thank you. You know, and I also have to say that beside this poem just being lovely in and of itself, it probably drew my attention as being related to our work more than it might have otherwise because of those last two lines. Those last two lines that say, Earth will be safe when we feel in us enough safety. You know, you and I do a lot of work with clients who work in dangerous businesses that have a high risk of workers being injured. And those could be construction sites or manufacturing lines. It could be on an offshore oil installation or railways. And our clients often request our help in having their workplaces be as safe as possible. So that word safety is going to attract my attention in any case. And I've returned to this poem several times, probably just because of that. And, you know, in this case, though, in addition to physical safety, I also wanted us to talk about psychological safety. And I've found that almost everywhere I go, there's a tremendous amount of suffering. And it's suffering that comes from a lack of interpersonal connection. It comes from the distance between the managers and the people who are making the business happen on the front lines. And this goes all the way back to just after the revolution, in my understanding. The Industrial Revolution. at the early part of the 20th century, a man named Frederick Taylor started studying how to make a manufacturing line move more efficiently. And he came up with several principles, and today they're known as, quote, scientific management. And one of those principles is that managers do the planning and training, workers perform the task. And this is the first time in the history of craft or making things of any sort in human endeavors that we see that separation. So it's only 100 years ago where managers do the planning and training, workers perform the task. And we know, obviously, that tremendous progress has occurred through throughout the 20th century as a result of scientific management and the great businesses and industries that boomed in this country and all over the world. And those businesses and our clients by now have institutionalized Taylor's principles. Great, except for 100 years later today, the world is so much more complex than Taylor could have ever imagined. And now we're starting to see the downside of that kind of thinking. And it's showing up, I think, in this suffering that I'm talking about. So again, if the idea of scientific management is to have all the authority vested in the people who use science and technology to plan work and then other people to do it. So I think, again, that distance and that separation of the planning and the execution is the source now of a lot of the suffering that you and I see and hear about and work with people with.
Absolutely, Catherine. I mean, I see the same thing wherever I go. You know, workers might like their jobs, might feel fairly physically safe, and still have this big disconnection and a huge distrust for management. So when that sensing of trust is missing and workers feel a lack of transparency or, let's say, a lack of sincerity from those with more authority, it's really discouraging and very unsettling for them.
Yeah. You know, you and I often do confidential interviews and online surveys with people in companies when we start working with them. And this is when I really hear about it. So prior to this podcast, I also know that you and I have gone back through the years and found a few typical quotes. And I'd like us to share some of those examples of the kinds of comments that people have that they've either shared with us in a conversation or they've written maybe at the end of a survey when they've been asked for the one thing that would make a difference for them. So let's go back and forth and just say what we've come up with. And why don't you go first?
Absolutely. Here's the first quote. I personally think that management talks a lot, but their talk doesn't seem very genuine or have real meaning.
Mm. Everyone that is above us doesn't seem to tell us anything of importance or doesn't know what's going on daily.
Mm-hmm. They need to be more active on the floor, not in the office.
I think listening to our concerns and acting on the concerns right away would help. We know where things can be improved.
Absolutely. It does not do any good to make suggestions. We stop reporting issues because nothing ever changes when we do.
Mm. Listen and implement what the workers have to say about their jobs or their groups instead of listening to somebody sitting at a desk that doesn't have a clue what goes on in the process. These desk sitters put in things or change things that make our jobs and processes worse or more difficult.
The guys at the lower level are well respected and add value. The senior figures aren't heard or seen. We usually only see them after an incident has occurred.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels to me like upper management is like a cloud floating by. Sometimes a lightning bolt might strike out. Other times, they're just floating by. Sometimes the decisions seem like they're up in the clouds.
A cloud floating by. They send out a lot of emails announcing when we will hit a milestone, but they aren't very visible. It's rare I see them.
Yeah, I like this one. I pretty much look at them as the grandmother you may not visit.
And you know, Catherine, whether it be in one organization or another, I think we've both found that these quotes have a similar theme to them. And I remember when I was working with an organization for over a year, and it was a very large organization. And when something would happen, one of the themes that would arise is that this organization was reactive rather than proactive. And so then, therefore, like I was saying, when something would happen, there would be a new policy or procedure. And their reference was, uh-oh, here comes the mothership. And what that meant was the mothership would come in and then everybody shout like this big big cloud. Now do as we say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love that image. I can see this ship going by and I'm the worker not on it. And it just passes in the night. And you can sense with that image and some of these others, like there they are over there, whatever. It has very little to do with me. And, you know, Kelly, it is a little bit funny. A mothership, the grandmother you don't visit, the desk sitter, whatever. And we've had a little fun with this, even looking them up and sharing them again together. And when our clients talk about this kind of stuff with us, you know, it gives them a chance to blow off a little steam in the moment. But, you know, it's not funny for us, really. It's very serious. And it's really not. I think you can feel, even under the lighthearted, funny ones, that it's not funny really for them either. And again, when I hear it, I can hear the suffering that it's really expressing for me. And then again, this is why we spend so much time with those managers, encouraging them to do a listening tour, to get out on the floor or out in the field to help them, those managers, close that gap wherever they can. But it takes time and it takes training to understand what a listening tour is, because managers do go out on the floor or out into the field, and they do think they do this in several ways, but they're not doing specifically this, and it's usually for other reasons that they're out there. A listening tour is distinct from the other times that they visit the sites, and the other visits could be for an audit or very likely because something has gone wrong, as you were saying, and as someone mentioned in the quotes, they might be speaking to a large gathering at a town hall meeting, or they might be escorting visitors who want to see the operations. All those are great, really good. None of them are listening tours. And we get a sense from when you were reading the poem, and I was talking about Thich Nhat Hanh, we can get a sense from that about what a walking meditation is. And now I want to give more of a sense of what a listening tour is. A listening tour is special, and it has its own intentions. And what I want to do is draw from Edgar Schein's book called Humble Inquiry to describe some of this. So one of the first intentions of a listening tour is simply to build better and positive relationships. Another intention is to ask open-ended questions that the manager really does not already have the answers for. Another intention of a listening tour is to be able to engage the worker or the workers, could be a small little crew, a team, in a way that they feel respected and safe to share what they know, to share what they think, and to share what their truth is about their work. And finally, it's to gather information or data about the workplace that wouldn't be available any other way to that manager. If I could go on a little bit and read directly a couple parts from Humble Inquiry, I'd like to do that. So Edgar Schein asks, why is it so important to learn to ask better questions that help to build positive relationships? Because in an increasingly complex, interdependent, and culturally diverse world, we cannot hope to understand and work with people from different occupational, professional, and national cultures if we do not know how to ask questions and build relationships that are based on mutual respect and the recognition that others know things that we may need to know in order to get a job done. This is the fine art of drawing someone out, of asking questions to which you do not already know the answer, of building a relationship based on curiosity and interest in the other person. Our culture today emphasizes that leaders must be wiser, leaders must set the direction and articulate values, all of which predisposes them to tell rather than ask. Yet it is leaders who will need to learn this most, because complex interdependent tasks will require building positive, trusting relationships with subordinates to facilitate good upward communication. And without good upward communication, organizations can be neither effective nor safe.
So well said. And you know, it gets me thinking, Catherine, when you talk about listening tours, and it's not just about going out and just being present, there's a real art and skill to it. I'd like to share a story of an experience that I had with a gentleman by the name of Andy Erickson. And Andy Erickson and I did work together with a very large organization, and we became friends, and he also became a mentor for me. And there was a skill and an art in listening tours that I would observe from afar. And here are the things that he did. He would walk up to someone, and he would extend his hand, and he'd make eye contact. And with a big smile, he'd say, "Hey, I'm Andy, what's your name?" And they'd say their name. And then he'd ask them a question or inquire about the work that they were doing. And he would pause and just listen. And you might ask a few more questions just to get relationship around this task at hand and the pride that they had in it, and maybe make a little chit chat on a personal level. But by the time he said, thank you for your time, and then he would always close it that way, thank you for your time, and he'd walk away, that person had a big smile on their face. And I knew that there was a connection made. And with that connection, Catherine, how do you think people felt when he walked away from them?
I'm sure their spirits were so lifted. They felt probably fantastic. Somebody was paying attention to me and wanted to know what I had to say about my work and what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And when Andy, if Andy were to ever go and make a request of that person in the future, what do you think their response might be?
Oh, I'm sure they couldn't say yes fast enough. I'm sure they would just want to probably do almost anything to hang out with Andy, and anything that he would ask, they would try to do for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was an experience to see, and it was a true joy to be a part of.
I love how you describe that, Kelly, because I know Andy too, although I've never had that experience with him on a work site. And he's a big guy, and he is that way, that he's making me smile just to think about him. And it's interesting because I love the way you describe that encounter, the way he goes on a listening tour and what happens, the effects of it, because I want to connect that back to the poem in a way that really doesn't look like it might necessarily connect, because those sites where he has been engaging people, the kinds of places where we work, are busy, busy places. Even if it's an office environment, it's a busy place, but much more often, and the place that we're asking these managers to go is out on a construction site or out on, and that construction site could be maybe the 15th floor of a high rise, or it could be it could be an oil refinery. It could be these places have a lot of noise, and they have a lot of equipment moving around, and there's vehicles moving around with materials on them, and there's people moving here and there, and there's the sound of tools, you know, pounding, or machinery doing its thing, or bells and sounds going off. And then you've got a worker that now you want to talk to, and they probably got a lot of PPE on, maybe a hard hat, probably have hearing protection in their ears, and it's already hard enough to talk about anything to them. And here you are, or here comes Andy, let's say, and he finds a way to bring his humanity forth and draw theirs out in a way that leaves them really elevated, that leaves them feeling so much better about themselves and the day. And then that's when I go back to the part of this poem that says, each step brings a fresh breeze. Each step makes a flower bloom under our feet. You know, a fresh breeze and flower blooming, print on earth your love and happiness. That's not exactly, again, what our work sites may immediately bring to mind, but I think the imagery of the poem and the effect that it has on that worker, I think they're very, very similar. So I still don't want to say that a walking meditation is the same thing as a listening tour, because they are distinct, and I want to be respectful of both of them for what they are. But given that both of them are about a particular way of being, I think there is something for leaders to learn from a walking meditation. And so now, to go back to the walking meditation, I was reading a little more about what Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings might say. And he says this: when we walk like we're rushing, which is honestly most of the time, we print anxiety and sorrow on the earth. We have to walk in a way that we can only print peace and serenity on the earth. Be aware of the contact between your feet and the earth. Walk as if you are kissing the earth with your feet. And you know, when you're walking with that kind of intention, it again, it's not the about the walk. It's about the presence of our humanity, and it's how we bring forth the humanity and the best parts of everyone that we encounter.
And for me, Catherine, that's why these poems are so powerful, and especially walking meditation in this case, because you bring forth these teachings. And when you say that his teaching said, when we walk like we are rushing, we print anxiety and sorrow on the earth, it causes me to reflect and think, you know, I do that. I really do walk with a rushing action and therefore do print anxiety. And this brings me to the last two lines of the poem once again, because you also referenced these at the beginning of the podcast. And the last two lines are, earth will be safe when we feel in us enough safety. So therefore, if I am safe enough, I will have enough peace of mind when I do my job. And with more peace of mind, I'll have more awareness of my surroundings and all that's happening in my area. And when I have more awareness, I will be safer and be able to even watch out for the safety of the people around me.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's right. And I think you've just made the connection, Kelly, between the practice of a walking meditation and the leadership skill of doing a listening tour.
Would you like to read the poem one last time?
Yeah, sure. Walking Meditation by Thich Nhat Hanh. Take my hand. We will walk. We will only walk. We will enjoy our walk without thinking of arriving anywhere. Walk peacefully. Walk happily. Our walk is a peace walk. Our walk is a happiness walk. Then we learn that there is no peace walk, that peace is the walk, that there is no happiness walk, that happiness is the walk. We walk for ourselves. We walk for everyone, always hand in hand. Walk and touch peace every moment. Walk and touch happiness every moment. Each step brings a fresh breeze. Each step makes a flower bloom under our feet. Kiss the earth with your feet. Print on earth your love and happiness. Earth will be safe when we feel in us enough safety.
I love that poem. I have enjoyed this conversation so much. We always wrap up, or we like to wrap up, with a tiny discipline. What do you think the tiny discipline would be from walking meditation?
Well, you know, we take this idea of a tiny discipline from the great poet David White, who also offers tiny disciplines at the end of any session when he's read his poetry. And with this one, first I want to say what is not a tiny discipline, and that would be doing a listening tour. And I do want people to do listening tours, and they are a discipline for sure. I just don't want to call a listening tour tiny. A listening tour takes a lot of intention. It takes time. It takes planning. It takes practice to be able to be masterful at it, like as you were describing that Andy is. So I don't want to say that there's anything tiny about a listening tour. However, a tiny discipline from this poem, from Walking Meditation, might be that you read the poem and center yourself in it before you go out to the front line on your listening tour. Read it once or twice to yourself. And because in some ways, I could even say that this doesn't really even feel as much like a poem to me as it does like a chant almost. I mean, I'm imagining the monastery, I'm imagining the monks there, and the rhythm of it, and the kind of in your mind that to just that we walk for ourselves, we walk for everyone, always hand in hand, walk and touch peace every moment, walk and touch happiness every moment, walk peacefully, walk happily. You know, just to have that kind of as a mantra in one's mind, I can almost hear Thich Nhat Hanh's voice offering that as a suggestion as you go out and engage with the people out there on the front line.
That is an excellent tiny discipline. In fact, I'm gonna apply it. I'm gonna definitely apply it. I love that.
I want and, you to.
I mean, seriously, I think I really am going to use this poem to apply that. Thank you for a wonderful conversation. I really, really enjoyed diving into this poem. And it got me thinking about listening tours and then also leadership as a practice. And I'd like to reference our listeners to the JMJ.com website, because there's a podcast, and the podcast is called What is Safety Leadership by Mike Adu. And in that podcast, Mike tells a story of a manager in Asia who did try the practice of doing a listening tour and the difference it made for the workers at his site. Another reference on JMJ.com is the video talk, Organizational Intelligence, the Art and Practice of Listening Tours. And this is with Michael Huvane, and with more details of how a listening tour is designed and how to do it. Catherine, I just want to thank our listeners and ask our listeners to connect with comments, stories of how this might have touched you. Be safe, be well, be balanced.
Thank you for listening to What Does Poetry Have to Do with Leadership? A special podcast series powered by JMJ's Transformation Talks. Join hosts Catherine Schindler and Kelly Bettenhausen as we explore the topic of leadership, one poem at a time. Head to jmj.com for episodes, insights, and more. In this episode, we explored the poem Walking Meditation from the book Call Me By My True Names, The Collected Poems of Thich Nhat Hanh, published by Parallax Press, new edition, August 9, 2001. If you enjoyed the poem and wish to purchase the book, ask for a copy wherever fine books are sold.